And hello, this is Chris Parker with the Business Simplicity Podcast. And I had a really great conversation with Uni Tarantini, who's coming from Norway as a human connection specialist and works with organizations about loneliness and increasing productivity through connecting with self and others. So it was a great conversation. Uni, why, in your words, do you think this would be really valuable for people to listen to it?
Thank you so much, Chris. This is valuable because we talk about that we want to increase employee well-being, we want to increase productivity, we want people to be more engaged at work. And the way that we go about getting that is through connection. Connection equals productivity, which again equals profitability. And that is what leadership and companies care about.
The Business Simplicity Podcast, where we learn about strategies and tactics to succeed through simplicity, with your host, Chris Parker.
And welcome back to the Business Simplicity Podcast. This is Chris Parker, and I'm having a conversation with Uni Tarantini, who's coming in from Norway. Although I believe she considers herself a world citizen, I met her about a month ago at an amazing workshop in London from Neurochange Solutions from Dr. Joe Dispenza. And there she shared that I think you've lived in, certainly in the US, because you have a law degree, and I believe you're in the bar in New York, as your LinkedIn profile tells me, and France and Switzerland, and then you came back to Oslo, and an author of some very interesting books about the Nobel Peace Prize process and how that maybe isn't completely transparent and fair, and also about a serial killer. Which is just fascinating topics, and you are a speaker and consultant around loneliness and human connection. And I am really delighted to have a conversation with Uni about human connection, and maybe human connection in the world of technology and technology leadership, where I think human connection is so, so important and oftentimes overlooked. So Uni, thank you so much for joining. I'm very appreciative of your time. I'm curious, maybe can you just give us a little brief on how, I'd love to connect the world of those two books, you know, the research you did there, and then into loneliness and human connection. Can you just tell us the story of how that came together and where it's going for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Chris, for having me on your wonderful podcast. It's such a pleasure to be here. And so my story with, and you're absolutely right, I come from the world of law and finance. I worked internationally. I'm a New York attorney and worked internationally for almost a decade before I quit my job at from a bank, investment bank in Switzerland, to be at home with my two small kids. And what happened was, and it's kind of like, I started researching and writing human connection. It was a coincidence, but now looking back, I know that it was meant to be. In 2011, we had this horrific mass killing in Norway. Anders Breivik, then 32 years old, blew up the government center in Oslo, got away, drove to the island of Utøya and started shooting teenagers at a summer camp. 77 people died, hundreds were wounded. And I was living in Switzerland at the time, and I just remember trying to call home, you know, hearing this on the news, trying to call home, couldn't get through. This was our 9/11 in Norway. And I remember trying to make sense of it all, trying to figure out how could this happen? How could this young man, all on his own, seemingly out of the blue, become a mass killer overnight? And then as I started studying his case and also studying a lot of other similar mass shooters cases around the world, I realized that it didn't happen overnight at all. This, you know, had been in planning for a long time, and a lot of unhappiness and disconnection leading up to the event. And I realized at some point in that process, while I was writing my book, I realized that that Breivik felt really out of place. He felt lonely. He felt like he didn't have a place in society. He felt very disconnected and empty. And I knew that feeling. I had been feeling that way for a big part of my life, big portion of my life, even when I had it all on paper, even then, as a mom of two healthy kids, I'd had a great career in law and finance. I married the best man I could have wished for. And I had a good life. I was connected. I had a lot of people around me and great people around me. And yet I felt dissatisfied, empty, and lonely. And that just, there was something that stirred inside of me and that made me, from that point, dig into human connection and loneliness after that first book. And so ever since, 2012 probably, I've been really diving into human connection. And although the Mystery of the Lone Wolf Killer, that first book, isn't really about loneliness or human connection, you can definitely feel that it's all there when you read it. You feel that disconnect. And then it's kind of funny how that, people often ask me, well, how did that lead you to write a book about the Nobel Peace Prize? And so here's what I, and this is also something that I am Norwegian. I am originally from Norway and now I live here. I write about things that I, dysfunctions that I see in our society. At least I have done up until now. Really seeing the things that are not functioning the way they should be and why. And the Nobel Peace Prize is really a book about leadership and trust in leadership, or, distrust in leadership, and why we're so disconnected from leadership and why we get so polarized. And since I wrote that book, I feel that it's only becoming more and more relevant with the political climate that we have in our society today.
Well, I think the a huge thing that's missing between leaders and the led, if you will, is human connection, and certainly in the workplace and in government even more. What did you learn from, because you had to research these very complicated human stories of tragedy, betrayal, mistruth. Mm-hmm. And obviously you found some patterns there that perhaps, we can learn from, because this is mm-hmm. your work, consulting and speaking to the large corporations of the world and coaching individuals. For leaders to connect to a more human level, do you mind if we sort of open that rabbit hole? And something that I like to kick around with, and sometimes is the concept of lazy leadership versus love leadership, because and maybe even lazy management versus love leadership, refining it as we go. That, I have an MBA, and we've learned all about this management science stuff, and you put people in these little boxes and these roles and these job descriptions, and you demand more productivity and output. And if they don't perform, if they squeak, you get rid of them. I just think it's so lazy. It's so lazy for everything. And there must be, and if human connection to yourself and to others, that's that human, that love aspect. Can you unpack that a little bit based on your expertise? Because I have these ideas and nudges and intuitions, but they're really rough and unrefined.
I love that. I love that topic, because why is this important? It's for most of us, it's not relevant why someone becomes a mass shooter, although it's definitely relevant to try to prevent them. But what I have been doing is bringing that knowledge, what I learned about human connection, into corporations, into companies, and helping people, teams, and leaders create more relational energy. Because when we think about it, and this is, you know, it's so relevant to companies. We know that absenteeism solely due to loneliness is costing, just in the US, is costing employers in the US more than $154 billion every single year.
Now, do you mean like the individual human is just lonely in their life and then therefore they're absent, or are they also lonely at work, or all of the above? Or
I think if you're probably lonely at home, you're lonely at work too. And vice versa. I think they are definitely, they go together. So that disconnect that you feel from being lonely, feeling empty, feeling bored, feeling anxious, feeling that you don't have, that you don't get your need for connection met in the workplace, mm-hmm. because that's what we're talking about at work. That causes a lack of productivity and sort of a resigning. We call it the Great Resignation. That's really what the Great Resignation is. It's a disconnection from ourselves and other people. So it's absolutely relevant to, and we also know, and just for the US economy, I believe that the latest numbers that I read is that we're talking just loneliness here, nothing else on the mental health scale, just loneliness, more than $460 billion every year in lost productivity for the US economy. That's huge. It's huge. Not to mention, you know, the sick leave, the health, you know, physical health issues, all of that loneliness that we know that loneliness leads to. So human connection is extremely important. And, you know, we something I noticed the other day, you know, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on social media, and I read about employee engagement every single day. I see the words employee engagement, workplace well-being, wellness, reducing stress, you know, we talk about burnout, we talk about all these things. And what is at the root? What do we need at the root of this? It's connection. Mm. Without connection, life doesn't make any sense. Connection is what makes our life meaningful.
Now let me maybe confront a little bit based on where we've met each other, and I think you probably know the answer to this, but my belief is, so I'll state it as a belief and see if you agree with it or disagree with it or want to expand on it, that it is, I'll just be bold, impossible to connect deeply with others if you haven't connected deeply with yourself.
Yep.
And then there comes in the tension or the paradox that at work, if you are, let's say, a leader, and put it in my world, a technical leader, and you want to have that human connection with others, but if those others or your for yourself are not connected to yourself, will it work? Like, can you start something, or is this really an inner job first, and then show up to the relationship? How does that love self before love others work in this context?
Yeah, I so agree with you on that. And that, I think, has been the missing link, especially in the corporate world. I mean, I think everywhere, but especially in the corporate world is, you know, we talk about, and even governments, you know, when you look at the loneliness minister in the UK, there's one in Japan as well to try to deal with loneliness. And now the U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, you know, I read his address that he published just before, in June 2023. And there is nothing in there about connecting to self. So just to say that, you know, it is important to have changes, organizational changes, structures in our society, those things can really help people connect for sure. But if we are disconnected from ourselves, it won't really help. Mm. So I agree with you 100%. And that is the work that I do with companies. And what sometimes leaders are surprised when I tell them this, listen, this is what we're going to do first. We're going to help your people. We're going to help you, because it has to, of course, has to start from the top, connect with yourself. That's from that place. When we are connected ourselves to ourselves, when we know who we are, when we know our worth, and when we bring that energy to the table, everything changes. And we know that because of our work with Dr. Joe Dispenza. So that is the work that we do there with the meditations, you know, daily, and really training our minds to changing our who we are, really, how we show up in the world. And so you and I both know and agree that that is the step number one. And it's funny because there's several researchers on human connection that is talking about the three levels of connections that you need. The first one is the intimate connection, which is one or handful of people that you can trust and be vulnerable with. Then there's the social connection, which means you have friends, you have acquaintances, you have colleagues. And then the third level of connection is societal connection, meaning that you feel that you have a sense of belonging in your community, in a larger group, within your country, perhaps. And so we need all three. We know that we need all three. But I would say the fourth one, which actually should be the first one, is connection with your own self. Mm-hmm. Without that. And the problem in today's society is that we are so disconnected, and we don't even realize that we're disconnected, because it doesn't necessarily feel like, oh, loneliness, I'm all alone, because we have people. Most people who are lonely and disconnected have people around them. And what makes us, what's standing in the way of human connection, the biggest thing that's standing in our way is survival mode. I don't know what you have experienced with that.
There's so much going on in my mind. There's let me throw up three paths and see where you want to go. One, I had a physical reaction to the title Loneliness Minister, because just the fact that it exists in that word, is. So one thing I'd like to unpack is, maybe is there a better word for that? How can you catch that, couch this in a better way? And the second thing is, I'm curious if you're open to go back into your time. I think it was in New York, where you felt very lonely. And I'm curious, on those three or four dimensions, looking back, you know, are you able now to understand a bit why? And then a lot of this, I think, also can really connect back to stress and. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because if you are, you know, in that, you know, I think, you know, that state of stress, that's the state of anxiety, and not connected to yourself, I think that's where burnout comes from. And that's probably where some of these other negative psychological issues that might even lead to, you know, mass murdering and those types of things in the ultimate extreme. So I know it's a bad podcast interviewer practice, but Which of those three rabbit holes are you most interested to go down?
I think they're all interesting, but just real quick to talk about the term loneliness minister. I agree with you that perhaps human connection minister would be a term, you know, a more positive spin on it. And actually, because that's what we want. We don't want more loneliness. We want more human connection. But at the same time, I kind of like loneliness minister, because it really coins the gravity of the situation. And I like it because I remember when I first started talking about loneliness back in 2012, 13, 14, when I first started, you know, I was out there speaking, and I wanted to talk about loneliness, and the organizers, you know, told me, Uni, no, you can't mention that word. Like we don't want to hear that word. This like we don't talk about loneliness here. And then I knew that this is a big problem, actually. This is a big problem. But nobody wanted to hear me talk about loneliness. I had a talk with the title, Loneliness, you know, How Can We Overcome It, or something like that. But nobody wanted to hire me to speak about that. And so I had to kind of sneak in that disconnection and talking more around it, you know, and talking about the symptoms. And so I actually, when I believe it was 2018 in the UK and 2020 in Japan that they started using the term loneliness minister. I actually, it was like a relief for me because, and then when Dr. Vivek Murthy said in 2017 that loneliness is an epidemic and the fastest growing one, you know, in our day, that's when I could finally start talking about loneliness openly. And so I think we needed that term, right?
What an incredible validation for your work as well. I can imagine. In the Dr. Joe space, and sometimes there's these healing sessions, basically people wishing each other wholeness and love. And what I love about that is the role of the meditators are healers, and then the people that are there that are seeking healing are called healees, and you know, they're not patients or recovering somethings. And I love that. I think the words are so very, very powerful. So.
Very powerful. Yeah. Absolutely. And you wanted to talk about, did you mention,
if you're open to it, if you project back now that you know so much more, to that time in New York when you were very lonely, and there's those three levels and then your fourth level of connection with self. Mm-hmm. What was missing at that time of those four levels? Was it that triggered that sense of loneliness in you in that time?
So I want to go a little further back than that, to even to my upbringing in childhood. And this is very generalized, but I do believe it's true. I still to this day have not met one person who was seen, heard, and valued and loved in the way that they needed to be growing up, right? It doesn't mean that we had terrible childhoods, you know, not at all. Most of us, you know, a lot of people had really good childhoods, but you weren't validated and loved in the way that you needed to be, because each one of us is unique. And our parents, you know, and I'm a parent myself, and so are you, we do the best with what we know, right? Like I really do believe that people do their best, most people at least. And I think that that is a little trauma that happens when you are not loved in the way that you needed to be, or not seen or validated in the way that you needed to. And for me, that started early. And I discovered that when I worked really hard and I got good grades and I was a good girl and I did all the things that people expected of me, and I showed up in the way that they expected me to be, so I kept changing myself to fit in, and I lost myself in that process. And then I linked my value and my sense of self-worth to my accomplishments. I felt that I could only be loved if I could prove that I was worthy of being loved. So my sense of self-worth, because that's what loneliness really is. Loneliness is, you know, it is, yes, it's that you don't get your need for connection met. But why don't you get your need for connection met? Because you have a deep belief that you're not worthy of love and connection. That's what loneliness really is. So we can't talk about loneliness and disconnection without talking about self-love. And so I would only feel good about myself for about 5 minutes when I had passed that exam or gotten that job or, you know, received that accolade or, you know, whatever it was. And so that became my way of living. I was just working, striving, struggling to obtain a new goal. And it was a never full. It was a never full. It was never enough.
I think if I jump in and share, I also believe my parents did the best they could, and were imperfect, as I am as a parent for sure. Man, the forgiveness that I can give to my parents in that chair, it's like, oh my God. But they got divorced when I was one, and I moved up the West Coast to the US and moved around a lot. And doing the work, by the work, I mean just self-work, discovering self, loving self, what I realized as a pattern is because I was literally in a different physical building for every year of my schooling up through university. So every once in a while, I was the same group of children. But what I found myself is I landed in a place and needed to become valued quickly. And so I found ways to adapt and serve. Mm-hmm. And when you said your coping mechanism was perhaps working, mine mm-hmm. was serving. And it's only mm-hmm. in the last probably, let's say 10 years, 5 years, that I realized that I have intrinsic value, even though I may not always be serving others. And so learning to serve self, love self first. And a big lesson I've learned is I don't need to help people unless they ask. And even if they ask, I don't need to even always do it then. You know, because I always have this really overdeveloped sense of service.
Yeah.
Like 2 nights ago, I was at the top CIO event in the Netherlands, and one of the CIO of the year candidates just fumbled his speech to the point that he had to stop and go back, and then they brought him out again, and every cell in my body wanted to get up there and help that guy, you know. Yeah. But I was like, this is not my fight. I don't even know this man. What is that? I did the day after send him a message that the fact that he recovered himself, got up, and then delivered it was the best show of leadership that I saw in that whole day. And he seemed to be very appreciative of that.
Yeah.
But
can I jump in with that?
Because
I am super, that's something very interesting to me, because one of the things that I say is, you know, like one of the things we can do to overcome our disconnection and loneliness is to focus on other people, is to contribute. Because when you give of yourself, you focus on and you see that the happiness that you can bring, even if it's just a little moment of you know, sharing a 30-second conversation with someone that you meet in the elevator, can make someone's day. And that makes you feel really good. And what's happening when you help someone is that relational energy is created. And so what I say at companies is that companies need to facilitate people asking for help more and people offering to help more. Because that's how you create that bond. But when you talk about serving in the way that I'm curious, where is the line between contribution and creating that relational energy and fawning and sort of serving to efface yourself?
I wish I knew. If you ask my wife, I'm always on the wrong side of that line, because I give away so much of consulting advice and expertise. And I honestly love it, you know, and I follow my inner compass on appropriateness. Yeah. And does it feel good? Do I feel taken advantage of? Is it hurting me? Cause I think early in my career, I would go out of my way to help people at my own detriment. So it was maybe too sacrificial and in an unhealthy way. I would just be too present for others and not enough for myself. And so I think, I don't know where that line is, but I know where the compass is on when I'm, for example, doing some Dr. Joe work, and I've been doing my meditation, and I am calm in my body, and I'm in touch with myself. Then my inner compass, I think, is quite trustworthy. If I'm fearful, scared, stressed, of course, the inner compass is a bit wonky. But when we talked about New York and then those four levels of say disconnection, and you went further back, what is a process to heal that? You know, because I, you know, I've been on my journey, but if you have that primal wound, or that child trauma, which everyone has, you know, that we've all grown up and have felt unloved and unheard, unvalued, that applies to everyone. what's the path forward from there? Like what have you seen done that really works?
So, I mean, it took me a really long time to figure that out, because I mean, nobody really gives you the solution to that. At least I hadn't found anyone else who had actually dug into that and given you the solution. And it's funny, you mentioned New York, but actually I felt like that, anywhere I went. I felt like that in Paris. I felt like that in the US, in Geneva, in Oslo, you know, Norway growing up. I felt like that pretty much anywhere. And it's funny, because I was, now looking back, I know that I was searching for connection and belonging. And whenever I realized I couldn't find it in one place, I would just move to a new place, just even a new continent. Mm. So that's how desperate I was, really, to find that place, one place to come home. And so for me, the starting point really, and then when I realized, and that's something, and that was really in the process when I was researching these mass killers, coming back to there to them, is that I realized at some point that these mass killers, these monsters, and me, we were not that different. We were both, you know, we were all of us really disconnected, feeling dissatisfied with our lives, and we didn't really know what to do about it. And now I do think there are other elements that come in and then to make you go to that extreme as violence. But there are definitely elements that we had in common. And the first, for me, the first element is to start working on coming back to oneself. And for me, movement has been really important, because what happens to a lot of people, and especially the people that I work with a lot of leaders and high, they're high achievers, right? Really excellent at what they do, perfectionists, you know, and they look like they have it all. And they're, you know, they're quite tough, you know, like they're tough people, but they live up here. They live up in their heads. And they're completely disconnected, like I was. I know I can help them because I was them, right? Completely disconnected from my body. Like did not feel a thing. So, and that's something that it took me a long time. I went to doctors, I hired coaches, mentors, healers, I read books, I started practicing yoga, I started meditating. And at one point, I just realized that I was in my body. And it sort of happened all of a sudden. I felt that I was actually connected with my heart, connected with my body. And I remember that I felt this incredible peace, that I didn't want anything. And I just felt so connected with everyone around me, and so grateful. And I got this clarity, this incredible clarity, that I could see how everything functioned around me. I could see my own programming, but I wasn't part of the program. I could see all the bullshit going on around me. I could see leadership. I could see governments. I could see all the bullshit that's going on, and I could just observe it. And I was just like,
Well, what I'm hearing, and something that I have experienced myself, is to sense those things, but without judgment. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that was the most, I want to say confronting, but maybe it's a negative term, but to be able to be in the presence of others that may be behaving differently than you would want them to. And then just be able to see that they are a human as well. And they are on their journey as well. And there's a level of empathy that is achievable through that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And not only are you capable of non-judgment and empathy and compassion, but also to see your own way forward. Mm. Like it's so much clarity. Like, you know exactly where you're going, and you know what you want, and you know what your purpose is And you can actually contribute in a way that is really meaningful, not only for you, but for others. Mm. And that gives you meaning life. And when you have purpose, it's really hard to feel lonely. So I think, you know, that clarity and finding purpose and living, showing up in that way is what's missing in our corporate world today, everywhere, but, you know, especially in companies. And I think knowing that most of us spend most of our waking hours working, if we can change that in companies, it's like, we're done.
Yeah, I think let's grab onto that. It's, I had some experience managing, leading as an executive, some amazing team in Egypt. And I think if I hadn't been doing this work, this inner work, the self-awareness work, the self-love work, I wouldn't have been able to show up in a place which was so fundamentally different in so many ways, and still feel comfortable in my skin and still being open to, and again, without judgment, embrace and engage with these amazing, beautiful, and creative people. We're going to put a link to where people can download a PDF called The 4 Keys to Engaging Your People. And key number one is increased trust. I'm not going to give all the keys away because they have to go get them. And the first point under increased trust is be yourself. So basically show up. And I think this is exactly what we were just talking about in leadership roles. Show up as you. And what I see without naming names recently is there is it's so obvious now when someone shows up as their imaginary CEO self.
Yep.
As opposed to when they show up as their authentic human self. Because in today's day and age, you know, in business, it's so volatile and uncertain that no one knows the answer of what's going to happen tomorrow. And if people show up as the you know, alpha CEO, pretending that, you know, it's just not going to work. And, you know, how glorious would it be if that executive team shows up as themselves and gives themselves the forgiveness of not knowing every answer and like you said, inviting help from the others.
Yeah.
And giving help to the others. You know, like what an amazing team that would be.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of increasing trust or restoring trust is you know, taking responsibility for everything. And we know how effective it is when a leader goes out and says, "I'm sorry, I messed up. Now I know better, I'll do better." You know, it's so effective. But how many leaders do we see doing that? Like hardly any.
Yeah. The powerful of "I'm sorry" or "I don't know," or the powerful of even just doing nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, sort it out, people. What a gift that is. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So they're definitely, you asked for, you know, tools, for how, like, where do we even begin? And for me, the beginning is facilitating this connection with oneself. And we can do that through breath, very easy. And we know that breath is one of my favorite ways, actually, to really quickly deactivate survival mode, because it really is about deactivating survival mode. And we know that, especially coming out of the pandemic, even if we have been out of it now for a while, so many of us are still in constant survival mode. And we know that it's not possible to, you know, when we're in survival mode, we are disconnected from the frontal lobe of our brain, which is the CEO of our life, right? It's not a time to restore. It's not a time to connect, to collaborate. It's just not a time for that because it's not necessary for your survival. So facilitating for companies to facilitate exercises like breath, like short meditations to deactivate survival mode at the beginning of the day and giving that gift to their people, what they're doing really is that they're creating more productive and profitable employees. So it's a win-win, right? And it doesn't take that much. So that is the beginning of that. And then, of course, we need to restore trust. We need to help people contribute more And yeah, there are several other tools too, but I think I cannot stress how important it is, like you said at the beginning, to reconnect with ourselves.
Take the time to get out of survival mode.
Yeah.
Connect to yourself, connect with others. Yeah. So Uni Tartini, thank you so much. We're sadly coming to the end of this. We will put a link to the PDF, the 4 keys to engaging your people, as well as links to your website and your social channels. And I would invite, if people want to increase human connection in their organization, I know your schedule, you're sort of popping all over the world doing workshops and engagements with people. So I imagine any larger organization that wants to bring some of this energy into their workplace, into the leadership team, please reach out to Uni. So Uni, thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
That was a meaningful conversation. I appreciate it.
Me too. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Visit ebullient.com to download the Simple Business Design Framework. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player.